welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fabulous guest that we've had a little problems getting our meeting done, but he's here today. I'm very excited. The film is Inheritance Italian Style. Doug Bremer's here. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So this is kind of different for an indie film. I mean, looks like it was shot in Italy. I mean, you could help me out a bit there if it was or wasn't.
Well, it we thought about shooting it in Italy, but you know, the budget to travel to Italy with the American crew and actors would have been, you know, outrageous. So what we decided to do is to film it in Georgia, where we have tax credits that make it very advantageous to film. We have a 30% tax credit that is one of the best in the country. So Georgia is now number two behind California for filming, and that's where I live. And we have scenes that if you put the camera in the right place, it looks like you're in Italy. So we have vineyards in the hills that, as long as you don't have the Georgia pine trees in the background, you're fine.
Yeah, you know, they had me fooled because I definitely thought the house looked very Italian-oriented. I mean, obviously you're tailing your cats to suit this premise. And I thought it worked wonders. You also have an airport in here. So where's the airport? Obviously near Georgia?
Well, the airport was, and by the way, my wife is Italian, and all of the furniture and the chandeliers come from their old family villas in Sicily. So that's why the interior of the house looks like it could be a Sicilian palazzo, because basically the furnishings are. And, her family in the past had larger houses, and they lost the houses. But one of the things Italians do is they'll take all the chandeliers out of a house after they lose the house and keep all the chandeliers. So we're able to get that. But anyway, that's sort of the background. What was the other question you asked?
The airport.
Oh, the airport. Yeah. So the airport is in Peachtree City. They now call it the Georgia Regional Airport. So it's a small airport. It's mainly for private jets, but there's actually a warehouse across the street that's been used for a number of TV shows, including Army Wives and some others, and they're used to renting it out for these sort of film gigs. But the reason why it looks like an real airport is it is a real airport, but they were very accommodating in letting us film there.
So where are the paintings from, too? I want to get into the paintings. Are there your wife's paintings, or did you rent them?
Well, actually, I've got one of the paintings here. I don't know if I can show it to you. There it is.
Yep, that's one of them.
Yeah, that was you can find painters that will do recreations of famous artwork. So it's an oil painter who copied a painting called Madonna and Child. It was originally by Mantegna, which is a Renaissance Italian painter. So he's well-known, not necessarily as famous as, you know, Leonardo da Vinci or something, but that was the premise of, so it's a replica. And, that was the premise of the film, or one of the premises is there's this valuable painting that was stolen. So that's how we created that. Actually, kind of interesting. I ended up getting this painter. It was from Romania, I think. And it took him several weeks. So I was worried we wouldn't have one in time. So we got another one from China, but in the end, the Romanian one came in. So we were able to use that.
So would you not use both paintings, or you just wanted that one to be the special painting, I guess?
So we got another artist from China. It was actually cheaper and faster to do another recreation of the same original painting. So they're just, you know, looking at the painting and then doing an oil painting that's a replica. But it's you know, original in that it was painted by that artist.
So why Inheritance Italian Style? I mean, you obviously had to do a lot of research on how these things work, or is this something you've learned having an Italian wife and listening to her?
Well, the story was based on, there was a real situation. There was a real situation where, which is kind of typical in Italy, where because the courts are so slow that sometimes the Italian families will divide up inheritances while the families are still alive, because they don't kind of have this probate like we do in the U.S. or in Canada. So that actually happened where they were meeting to divide things up, and there are arguments going on and everything. That's about the limit to how much reality there was. Because, I mean, I obviously, to make it a comedy, I tried to make it exaggerated and make some of the family dysfunction more dramatic than it was in reality. But originally the name of the movie was Catania, which is one of the major cities in Italy and in Sicily. And my wife originally was from Messina, another major city. But once we got a sales agent, she wanted to change the name to make it appeal more to people that might have a nostalgia for Italy, or, you know, have enjoyed going there for vacation or enjoy Italian cinema. But, you know, I think in the end that was sort of a mistake, because that's not really what the movie's about. It's more about the characters and not really about Italy. And it's just, you know, the fact that it was set in Italy is just mainly because I'm familiar with that from my wife. And mainly because, you know, we considered changing the venue to be an American family, but it would, in my mind, it wouldn't have been seemed realistic to have an American family arguing over their inheritance before the parents had died. Whereas in Italy, it's totally believable. In fact, it did happen with my wife's family. So that's sort of why we stayed with it, you know. And you could argue back and forth. You know, some of the shots of Italy were stock footage of, you know, shot in Italy. And one of the churches that we used for the logo was shot by a Catania photographer. And, you know, some of the more clever critics did kind of a gotcha and said, well, hey, you use stock footage. I could figure it out. But I think most people don't really know that. You know, we're not film critics.
I guess I'm not good enough as a film critic. I didn't notice, but I can't say I watch a lot of Italian cinema to notice. I liked your characters a lot. How long did you spend to develop them? Because they all seem to have a different quirk. They don't all seem cookie cutter. They all seem to have a motive.
Well, that was another thing. You know, a lot of people said, you know, for your first film, you shouldn't have a film with 16 characters because people won't be able to keep them all apart, you know, keep them separated in their mind. So one of the main things I had to do was to really differentiate them. And so the way I do that is I write a backstory about each character, and then I try and find something that makes them really unique. You know, so, you know, Tristana stood out because she was depressed and she was in a wheelchair. And another one stood out because she was always smoking weed and running out to the garden shed to hang out with her boyfriend. And each character actually had a color, you know, so that character, Duplicia's color was brown, and so we dressed her in brown and earthy tones because she was back to the earth. And Seconda was yellow, because she was sort of more stylish and more kind of externally, you know, kind of superficial. And then Fulvia's color was red, and we had her character was supposed to be anorexic and eating ice cream all the time, but The actress didn't like that. Some of the actors didn't like their characters, so they were fighting me about, you know, doing some of the stuff that I wanted them to do.
How does that work as a writer to have people fighting with you? I mean, you've written the script, you've written a backstory for them, they've signed on knowing all this. How does that feel?
Well, I mean, I think it's human nature that it depends on the actor, you know, like, I think my experience is sometimes actors have trouble playing parts that they don't like the person, you know, but, you know, I say that's the whole point. You know, we created this character to not necessarily be black and white, but not necessarily, you know, be lovable either. And, you know, one of the people I did a show with, he said, well, if you're trying to have Natasha be a despicable character, you did a really good job, because I absolutely hated her. She was the one who was always sort of shouting at her husband, and then she had an affair with the brother-in-law. So I don't know. I think it really depends on the actor. I kind of, my imagination is that if you had a, you know, like a Meryl Streep or something, they would kind of maybe would rise to the challenge of playing a difficult or unlikable character. Although, you know, I don't know. I called Meryl Streep to ask her to play a role in this movie, but she declined.
So when you're casting on your first film, did you have a look you were looking for, or you were just hoping to get solid actors in?
Well, you know, we had some of the actors were, they were like the part. So like the guy who played the absent-minded professor is a friend of mine. He's another doctor from Atlanta who writes screenplays. He wrote the screenplay for the film Doc Hollywood that had Michael J. Fox in it. But he's like that in real life. He's sort of, you know, absent-minded and kind of, you know, looks like he's in his own world. So he just sort of played himself, you know, with a little bit more exaggeration. Most of the actors were from Georgia and North Carolina. We had a couple that came from California. So we did, you know, auditions on video and, you know, and then we flew out a couple of people just because I wanted to be sure, you know, that they were, you know, going to be good. I think, you know, one of the Secunda actor, she said, if I knew this was going to be a comedy, I wouldn't have set up for it. So it was sort of like, you know, it's like they weren't fully aware of what they were getting into. But I mean, I think she still did a pretty good job nevertheless, because her role was what you would be called more of a straight man, I guess. That, you know, she wasn't a comedic figure herself. It was just sort of, she was just sort of trying to kind of move along, and then all this sort of chaos and dysfunction was happening around her. You know, the guy who played Lucky, who was the one who had the affair with Malona, you know, his background was, you know, he does like one act theater in France, you know, it's kind of much more kind of artistic and theatrical. So he was a theater actor. So this was way out of his normal league, but you know, he's been sort of following the reviews and stuff. One thing about actors I found is that they really love what they do, and you know, if they get good feedback for the role they play, then they eat that up, you know, regardless. So they're really mainly concerned about playing the parts in a way that, you know, is well received. And for the most part, that's been the case.
I just want to ask about a couple of scenes. I thought the cell phone scene was such a now scene where everybody's on a cell phone. I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah, that I sort of envisioned that as like it would just get louder. I think I saw an independent movie a long time ago where the noise got louder and louder and louder, you know. We got there as close as we could, I think. You know, there's sort of a limit to how loud it can all get.
Now the drawing.
Go ahead.
Sorry, the drawing of straws, is that normal?
I think that in my wife's family they actually did that. They sort of had this like, let's go around and take turns, and you pick first, then you pick, and then, you know. So they did a drawing of straws. So that actually happened. Although then they started arguing about it. You know.
That's kind of funny.
Actually, they just. Newspaper in Sicily did it. It was this newspaper called La Sicilia. It's the biggest print paper in Sicily. They did a story about the making of the film where they sort of portrayed it that it was a fictional story, but then the way they wrote it is like, you know, we made this story based on what happened in this family. And then my wife's Italian family got really angry when they saw that. And they've never actually seen the film, I don't think, or most of them not.
Well, then I don't think they should really comment. It's like critics not commenting on films they haven't seen.
Yeah. I don't think it was fair.
I don't think that's fair at all. Crazy Hair of the Italian Men, was that a plan or was that the actor's choice?
You mean the guy who played the mafia guy?
That's the one.
Well, he came up with that costume sort of on his own, and it was over the top, you know. And I don't know, I thought it was pretty funny, but you know, not everyone laughs at my jokes.
The names for the characters, are they based on anybody you know?
Well, originally the characters were even more absurd, and that was another thing when people were reading the script. They said people are not going to remember these names because they're all absurd name. So like, you know, Duplicia is a made up name, right? There's no such name in Italy. And it's sort of, and actually the woman who was playing that part said, why am I named Duplicia? And I said, because you were not honest all the time. Because it's sort of a play on duplicitous. So then, but, you know, originally, like, Natasha was Narcheleta, because he was, like, self-absorbed. But I don't know. I thought, well, I'll modify some of them, you know, to make them regular names so that people don't get totally lost. But originally, Fulvia was called Fluzamina because she was sort of a floozy. And so I altered some, you know, to be regular names just so that people don't get totally lost. But that's sort of the background of the name.
So as you were filming as a first-time director, how did you find it?
It turned out to be, like, way more fun than I thought it would be. I thought that my motivation was, you know, as a writer, and I've written books and started writing screenplays. And my daughter was sort of interested in film. So I thought, well, let's do this together. And she didn't like working with her co-director. So she quit after the first day, and I was sort of on my own. But, I don't really have a theater background, but, I ended up, it just was a lot more fun than I thought. So now I'm kind of like, I'd love to do another film. And so I've been trying to kind of get back to, you know, do a second film ever since then.
You filmed this in 2014 or 2016?
Well, the filming was done in 2012. And then it, you know, since it's a, you know, it's low budget independent film, it took longer to edit because, you know, we don't have as many resources. And then we showed it in some festivals in 2014-15, a little bit more editing. It came out in 2017, and then the distributor went bankrupt, and then we went through another distributor, and then it came out for a brief time on streaming on Amazon, and then they went bankrupt, and then we had another bankruptcy. So it's been a few years kind of, you know, trundling along, but it's really just been the last 6 months that it's been fully available. And so if you look at the reviews, they've really just come in the past 6 months or so, or past 3 months, really.
So did that dissuade you, the bankruptcies, from wanting to do another film? Are you saying you do want to do one now, but at that time, were you still into it?
Well, in retrospect, you know, the second film I had started kind of working on a few years ago, but I'm actually kind of glad that I've, you know, had the opportunity to really finish this film in terms of, you know, getting the subtitles and the closed captions in the form that would be accepted by Amazon, you know, the stuff like that, that it takes a lot of time, and doing the proper kind of, you know, public relations and sort of in terms of, like, you know, reaching out to people like you and others to do podcasts and to do reviews of the film. That the reviews ended up being a lot more positive than, you know, than I expected. You know, we got an 80% on Rotten Tomatoes just, you know, a month ago, which is pretty good, you know, and it really has a major impact in terms of whether people are going to be motivated to watch it. But the second film I've been trying to make is called The Goose That Laid the Golden Egg. And about 2 years ago, we got the whole thing cast, and we had studios down at Screen Gems here in Atlanta, but it was a bigger budget. And so we raised part of the money, but not all of the money. We had some people cast who were, you know, like we had Perry Gilpin, who was, she played Roz on Frasier. And then we had Cynthia Watrous, who's one of the stars on the TV show Lost, which went on for quite a while. So, you know, we had kind of more well-known actors, but, you know, that raises the budget. And so, you know, the budget's a little bit higher, but, you know, I'm still kind of working on trying to pull that film together. But, you know, because we had sort of upped the game a little bit in terms of the cast and you know, some of the other aspects of the filming, it makes it more challenging to raise enough money. You know, and then the other challenge is, you know, doing it in a way that you're not losing money for the investors and whatnot. So this Inheritance Italian Style turned out to be, you know, a winner with the tax credit and everything, and everyone got paid back. But, you know, it was, since it was lower budget, that was easier to do. So I'm kind of locked into a little bit higher budget for this next one, but, you know, we may have to revisit and see how that goes.
Now, you played the delivery man in your last film. Do you plan on taking a bigger role in your next film?
No, I don't know. I mean, you know, a lot of people say that I look like Harrison Ford, or I look like, you know, this actor and that actor. So I think, well, maybe I could, you know, pull it off. I think I'd have to take acting lessons. Or maybe I would like to. My son played the angry teenager in Inheritance of Time Style with Morris. And he's, you know, this next movie that we want to make, The Goose Laid a Golden Egg, it's about a psychiatrist that takes on a corrupt drug company. And the opening is a teenage suicide. So he's playing the teenager that commits suicide as a side effect of this prescription medication. So I think in this one, I probably have myself cast as like another minor role. You know, it's sort of like Orson Welles or Alfred Hitchcock has a role where there's only like two lines or something like that. That was sort of the idea.
Now, I want to know who is Chi-Chi. And is that the real name of the cat?
So if you remember, Chi-Chi, like you see her right at the very end. The professor finds the cat, you know.
Yes.
That was a real cat. I think it was the cat of the actor that played the mother, as I remember. And we kept bringing her, you know, in her little cage. And then at the time I had this dog that was this Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. So we always had this sort of cat dog thing going on, and it was kind of added stress, the fact that, you know, that scene kept getting pushed back a day, you know, as it happens a lot of times. But that was the cat of one of the actors. And the other thing is that we had to, you know, get permission from the Humane Society to use animals on, you know, you're supposed to get the Humane Society to be on set if you're using animals, but, you know, we emailed them and told them when it was going to happen, but in the end, they just didn't show up. Although what we were doing was not any threat of being anything bad to the animals. All it was is just, you know, we sort of had the professor sort of find the cat sort of behind the stairs or something, and then he just sort of picks it up and says, "I found Chi-Chi."
Yeah. Do you enjoy running jokes? Is that why the Chi-Chi joke keeps coming back and back, which I quite found funny?
Well, my thinking is sort of like the movie is about relationships, right? And about the sort of, you know, what I wanted the theme of the movie to be about was about people kind of finding self-affirmation for themselves, whether through relationships or whether they have to kind of do that on their own and not rely on other people to get affirmation, you know, so they... You know, some of the characters are looking to their spouses for support and affirmation, and then they find that the spouses are unfaithful, and so they can't count on them. And then the two characters at the end, towards the end, sort of, you know, kind of find mutual affirmation in a way that wasn't really anticipated. And sort of the cliche would be that, you know, in the end they would kind of get together, but I didn't want it to be cliche, so... And I kind of left that open-ended at the end. But so there was this thing about relationships, but then it was supposed to be a running gag where, you know, the professor was sort of in his own world and not really totally disconnected. But then he had this special relationship with the cat, you know. And so in the end, he finds love. He finds the cat. And other people find maybe not love, but they kind of find affirmation or connection, you know, the two kids connect at the end, you know. That was, in my mind, that was sort of the running gag.
Okay, before we let you go, where can everybody find your film? Oh, sorry, I'm not even there. I forgot to ask you your fun questions. I almost forgot. Your favorite movie, please.
Probably the Player. You know, it's with Tim Robinson, who some people say that I look like him, but I kind of like it because it's kind of about the film industry, you know, pitching story ideas and stuff, but then it's as an unusual twist, you know.
It does have an unusual twist.
Yeah.
Your second question, what's an underrated film that you recommend to everybody?
One film that I just watched that the independent film. It was low budget, but just came out a week ago. It's called Lotawana. And some of the same company that was doing PR for us also did it for them. So I was sort of following where they were getting reviewed because, you know, some of the same reviewers were reviewing them as us. And it's another movie with an unusual twist. So that was one that I saw this year that I liked. It's on on Amazon Now, and I think you have to pay for it, but it just came out. It was filmed all on a lake in Missouri it's about a guy living on this boat in this lake in Missouri, and it was done by a nature photographer who had an Emmy for a documentary nature series, so there's a lot of nature shots in it. The photography is really good.
Okay, now we're at the good part. Before I let you go, can you tell everybody where they can find your film?
Okay, so our website is called Catania the Movie. Catania was the original title. It's C-A-T-A-N-I. So it's Catania the Movie, and that has a link there for Watch Now, and it'll show you all the different places you can watch it. But you can see it on Amazon Prime, Amazon Tubi, Plexi, Roku, Vimeo. Tubi and Plexi are free, of course, but they have ads. And Vimeo has Italian and Spanish subtitles on it, and Amazon, as does Amazon and Amazon Prime. But on Amazon, it's only 99 cents.
I think it was 9 cents. I think.
Yeah. So we're not out there for money and profit alone.
Hey, good film's a good film. I don't care how long it is. If I enjoy it, that's all that matters. Thank you again for your time and have a great evening.
Okay, thanks a lot.